Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, November 26, 2019. We're reading to you from our studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Peggy, and my partner at the microphone is Doug, and we're glad to have you listening. We'll start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. First, Fort Dodge school food pantries available for families. Next, Money for Growth Alliance spurs Fort Dodge Council debate. Next, Fort Dodge Senior High students recognized during school board meeting. 2020 street projects for Fort Dodge revealed. And finally, jury hears from the one Tanner King allegedly missed. Today's weather forecast, you can expect a high of 38 degrees, a low of 28, with rain in the afternoon turning to snow overnight. And now here's Doug with our first article.
Hey, good Monday morning.
It's Tuesday, though, dear.
This is Tuesday?
Yeah, this is Tuesday.
Oh, man. Good Tuesday morning. The first article is by Kelly Winger. Fort Dodge School food pantries available for families. With the Thanksgiving and winter holiday breaks ahead, some Fort Dodge Community School District families may be worrying about how they will keep from going hungry during those breaks. Four schools in the district are prepared to help ease that stress. There are free food pantries located inside Duncombe Elementary School, Butler Elementary School, Fort Dodge Middle School, and Fort Dodge Senior High for students and families to utilize throughout the school year, but especially now as the holidays near. Ryan Flattery, principal of Duncombe, said his school's pantry just opened this year and is stocked mostly by donations from the Fort Dodge Study Club and other families in the building. He said there aren't nearly as many families using the resource as he would like to see. And this continues. On a busy week, we might have 5 to 7 families using it, he said. But we know that there's way more than 5 to 7 families who could benefit from it. So we're really trying to generate interest. Flattery says about 8 out of 10 Duncombe students qualify for the free and reduced school lunch program. The free and reduced lunch takes care of breakfast and lunch while our students are here with us. But it's actually these 5 days coming up for Thanksgiving weekend where we're trying to supplement what the kids have to eat at home. There are no income requirements or paperwork to fill out to use the pantries. Parents or caregivers can come into the school's office to check in and then take what they need. Or if they're here for a conference or to meet with a teacher for any other reason, we want them to grab food every time they're in the building, Flattery said. At the middle school and the high school, the students themselves can go to the food pantry to pick out items. We feel like if somebody is taking food from the pantry, then we believe they need it. So we don't check to see if anyone needs any type of requirements. We know that from time to time, everybody falls into hard times, so we don't ask questions. All that we ask is that they leave enough for everybody else to share too. Flattery notes that it's not just families who live below the poverty line who can benefit from the food pantry. Even though our families may be working and doing their best, they might just not be making ends meet and just need a little bit of extra, he said. Flattery encourages families who need a little bit of extra help to utilize the food pantries in the schools. Many, including Duncombe, also stock personal care items like shampoo, soaps, razors, and other hygiene products. Families are also encouraged to reach out if the school buildings they're in don't currently have a food pantry, as other pantries in the district may be able to help. We're all in this together, is the message Flattery hopes to convey to parents and families through his food pantry program. Our goal is to reach kids, and before we can teach kids, we have to love kids, and if our kids are hungry, or if our kids have some other needs, then we just need to take care of those needs first, the principal said. We realize that we just want to get the word out to as many people as possible that we're here to help them, and we have some food that we would like to share with the people in our community, especially our Duncombe family. And here's the food pantry locations. At the Duncombe Elementary School Family Food Pantry, it's located just inside the main entrance. Families and students can check in at the office for assistance. And at Butler Elementary School Food Pantry, located in the Family Resource Room near the front office, families and students can access pantry by coming to the school office anytime during the school day. And at the Fort Dodge Middle School Food Pantry, it's located in the Family Resource Room near the library. Families and students can access pantry by visiting the Student Services office anytime during the school day. And at the Fort Dodge Senior High Food Pantry, that's located in the Alternative High School in the southeast wing of the building near the loading dock. Students can stop by anytime during the day. Parents can come in as well, but need to check in at the main office.
And next is Money for Growth Alliance Spurs Fort Dodge Council Debate by Bill Shea. A measure that would eventually allow the Fort Dodge City Council to give the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance an additional $20,000 in the next fiscal year ran into opposition Monday from some elected officials who were concerned about transparency or didn't like the way the issue was explained to them by city staff members. It's not the bag of goods that you sold me in your office, Councilman Jeff Halder said to City Manager David Fierke. However, Councilman Kim Allstott, Nevin Conrad, and Dave Flattery all said Fierke properly explained the item. The measure eventually passed on a 5-1 vote with Councilwoman Lydia Scherr abstaining because she works for the Growth Alliance. Councilman Terry Minke, Allstott, Conrad, Flattery, and Halter voted yes, while Councilman Dean Hill voted no. Just because the measure passed does not mean the Growth Alliance will get an additional $20,000. Mayor Matt Bemrick said an agreement will have to be reached with the Alliance, and the Council will have to approve a budget that includes the money. The measure before the council Monday was resolution approving internal advances for urban renewal projects. It is closely related to other measures certifying debt to be paid off with tax increment financing and the uses of the money that tax increment financing will be used for. The amounts and uses of money in the resolution are $162,000 for professional support for the Growth Alliance, $150,000 to reimburse the city for staff time spent on tax increment finance projects, $75,000 for legal fees and other services for tax increment finance projects, $30,000 for Main Street Fort Dodge. Hill questioned what he saw as a $20,000 increase for the Growth Alliance, raising its professional support total from $142,000 to $162,000. Bemrick said the resolution would increase the amount the council can take for that purpose, but added that the council would not give that amount to the Alliance. I still don't agree with the way it's being done, Hill said. It still doesn't seem very transparent. Hill moved to delete the extra $20,000 from the measure. His motion was defeated with only Halter joining him in voting for it. Allstott, Conrad, Flattery, and Minke voted no, while Scherr abstained.
The next article is Fort Dodge Senior High students recognized during a school board meeting. And also Stu Cochran is reelected board president. This article is by Kelly Wingert. More than 90 Fort Dodge senior high students are recognized for their hard work and dedication to sports, arts, and activities during the Fort Dodge Community School Board Education meeting Monday evening at the Fort Dodge Middle School Auditorium. Students were honored for their achievements over the past year for baseball, softball, cross country, girls, swimming, where's this?
Second page.
It's second page. Here we are again. They're honored for girls swimming, volleyball, football, cheerleading, color guard, dance team, choir, band, and fall play. The first action item on the agenda for the board was a settlement between the Board of Education and the treasurer, which is an annual procedure the district does to account for every dollar spent by the district. The board also passed a resolution naming Great Western Bank of Fort Dodge and UMB Bank of Des Moines as the district's depositories for the Fort Dodge Community School Board funds. Brandon Hansel, FDCSD, Director of Financial Services, gave the board an update on the year-to-date financial reports for the district. Year-to-date revenue is at $11.2 million, he said. Expenses are $9.5 million, or 20.35% of our budget, right where we need to be. The board had a second reading of the reviews and revisions to Board Policies 800 Series, Buildings and Grounds, and 900 Series, School-Community Relations. Those policies will go through a third reading and a final approval from the board at its next meeting. The board also approved a first reading of the revision to Board Policy 605.5, Parent and Family Engagement District-Wide. During the superintendent's update for Dodge CSD, Superintendent Dr. Jesse Ulrich thanked the Fort Dodge Senior High staff for participating in the No Shave November competition to raise canned goods for the school's food bank. A very noble cause, Ulrich said. Following a regular meeting, the board held an organization meeting to swear in newly elected board members and to elect a board president and vice president. Angela Tracy, Bill Kent, Steve Springer, and Matt Wagner were elected to the board following the November 5th city and school board elections. On Monday night, the board also voted to re-elect members Stu Cochran to the role of board president. Wagner was re-elected to the role of board vice president. The next school board meeting will be at 6 p.m. on December 9th at the Central Admission Administration Building, 104 South 17th.
Next is the 2020 street projects for Fort Dodge Rebuild. The 2019 road construction season has just wrapped up and Fort Dodge officials are already planning next year's work. The big project for 2020 in the city will be the reconstruction of the intersections of Central Avenue and 15th Street and 1st Avenue South and 15th Street. Castor Construction of Fort Dodge has $4 million? A $4 million contract for that work. On Monday, City Engineer Tony Trotter reported to the council on an additional $1,850,000 worth of street work and about $4 million worth of storm sewer work planned for next year. The street work includes repaving 14th Street between 6th and 10th Avenue North, repaving Crest Avenue, repaving 2nd Avenue North between 22nd Street and the Union Pacific Railroad tracks, rebuilding Country Club Drive and Parkwood Court, rebuilding the intersection of 7th Avenue South and 30th Street. Trotter said that the list of projects could change, especially if severe winter weather damaged the street. Nearly every year, spring comes around and something raises its head that has to be dealt with immediately, he said. The Country Club Drive and Parkwood Court work will be done using a process that hasn't been used in the city before. The concrete street surfaces will be pulverized, but the resulting rubble will be left in place. It will be compacted to form a base on which asphalt will be applied. On October 28, the council hired McClure Engineering Company of Fort Dodge to prepare the plans for that project at a cost of $98,809. Councilman Jeff Halter voted against awarding that contract, and he objected to the project again on Monday. He said it doesn't fit the priority list. Most of the storm sewer work is planned for the city's south side. However, one project will address the area along 12th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenues South.
This next article is about the Tanner King trial. The defense will read hundreds of pages of interview transcript before closing arguments. It's by Elijah Dishuis. Jurors heard a lion's share of the defense team's remaining witnesses in the 10th day of Tanner King's double murder trial, but one of the most significant parts of the narrative, Cleisha Clark, remains as the largest obstacle between the jury and closing arguments. Boom, 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 in quotation marks. Clark described the scene of the shooting, telling Detective Larry Headland of the Fort Dodge Police Department that he saw King shoot L. Dominic and Marion Rose. He tried to pop me and I ducked. In the deal announced Monday between prosecutors and defense attorneys, Clark, the Fort Dodge man that defense attorneys have maintained actually killed the Rhodes brothers on October 22, 2018, will no longer be subpoenaed as a defense witness, a significant point of contention that has affected the pace of the trial, originally scheduled to be near its end by now. King of Fort Dodge faces two first-degree murder charges stemming from the shooting of the Rhodes brothers, whose bodies were found in the alley behind his former apartment building near 9th Street and 3rd Avenue North. An attempted murder charge for the alleged failed shot at Clark was dropped before the trial started. In lieu of Clark taking the witness stand with a complex navigation of his Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate himself, King's attorneys will star in their new voice actor roles for most of the remaining trial as they read hundreds of pages of transcribed interviews between Clark and Headland. Defense attorney Catherine Flickinger is reading Headland's lines at the defense table, and lead defense attorney Paul Rounds is reading Clark's lines on the witness stand to help with monotonous nature of the reading. It's unclear why the deal requires them to read the transcripts instead of playing the actual audio recordings of the interviews. In the reading anticipated to constitute a majority of the defense's remaining presentation, jurors heard a few key insights among the monotony of every last unintelligible and door-closing note transcribed in the first of four dictionary-sized binders. In great detail, Headland drew out Clark's narrative of the murder scene that unfolded that night and what his role was as a storm of conflict played out between several people. "You're not going to find a gun because the person ran off with it," Clark said, as he avoided naming King explicitly as the shooter early in the interview. "I witnessed it. I know who did it." Clark, whom defense attorneys have said fooled Hedlund with smoke and mirrors about racism that prevented Hedlund from pursuing him further as a suspect, detailed his role at the scene in the interview. This quotation, "This dude, Tanner King, just executed two black people," Clark said. "He tried to kill a third one, and he's a racist." Later, Clark called King a Nazi, citing his involvement with the Peckerwood Prison Gang, a known white supremacist group, and his Nazi-themed tattoos. Defense attorneys have previously pointed out that those tattoos are based on video game characters. "This could turn the city upside down," Clark added. Quotes like that have been previously cited by Rounds in his attempt to paint Clark as an opportunistic and manipulative. Clark, who was then facing charges for his role in the September 2018 armed robbery of Fort Dodge's Applebee's, as well as a subsequent robbery in Waterloo, also sought to make a deal for offering the information in the shooting. Seeking leniency in his other cases throughout the interview before delving into valuable intel, Clark asked Hedlund to let him wear a wire that could capture the confession from King. Clark did not receive any plea deals of leniency with regard to his other cases. He has since been convicted for his role in the armed robbery of Applebee's. Clark says King shot L. Dominic and Marion Rhodes before turning to Clark, who ducked to miss shots that hit the white Lincoln MKZ owned by his girlfriend, Maggie White. Initial police reports and Clark's interview indicate that the dispute started with Clark and King discussing bad drugs sold to White, escalated as the Rhodes brothers and two other unnamed individuals arrived at the scene. "So you were having a conversation, the third and fourth guy show up, and storm happens." Okay, we know what that is. Something happened. Hedlund said, summarizing what Clark said in the interview, "Of the people at the scene, Clark said two were dead, two were alive, and two were in jail. It's unclear where the two alive were the same as the two incarcerated ones he referred to." Clark said after the failed shots at him, King turned back to take more shots at Marion Rhodes, but his gun just clicked. He was out of bullets. "Must have been only a 7 or 8 shot clip," he explained. Clark said King ran up the alley, hid the gun under the nearby porch, and cut between nearby garages before running up the path towards the old Phillips Middle School, consistent with the direction previous state eyewitness Margaret Seiler said she saw him running in. In interviews, Hedlund elicited information, at least in part from Clark, placed at the scene by his own words and investigators, by saying that he could neither be a witness in this situation or a prime suspect. The detective told Clark that he would likely be made out as a scapegoat by King's attorney at trial. Clark also described the gun holster consistent with the elastic hand sewn one acknowledged by both the state and defense during the trial, saying that there would be gunpowder residue both on that and the gloves he said King wore that night. On the stand, King said he was modifying the gun for his skinny friend, Clark, after hearing complaints that his gun kept falling out of his pocket. The defense also attempted to take care of unfinished business with regards to its bad blood theory, which they say implicates Clark and absolves King. Rounds has continued to point the finger at Clark, saying he was carrying out his hits order by Johnny Young of Kansas City over a 2008 grudge between Young and Marion Rhodes. He contends the bad blood was a result of a perception that Rhodes and girlfriend Brandy Mack snitched on Young over a check fraud case. Brandy Mack denied any knowledge of bad blood on the witness stand and the trial's first week. On the stand Monday, her brother Jeremy Mack acknowledged rumors of the feud while saying that he didn't believe King was innocent in the ordeal, just that he wasn't acting alone in the shooting. Other witnesses called by the defense further attempted to cement the defense's ongoing negative characterization of Headland. Those other witnesses described the experience of having their houses raided on search warrants as a result of investigation in the King case and other various related cases. The reading of Clark's interview will continue today.
And now for this date in history and the Messenger poll. The poll, this week's question, do you watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? You can put your vote in at messengernews.net. And then by the Associated Press, today is Tuesday, November 26th, the 330th day of 2019. There are 35 days left in the year. Today's highlight, on November 26, 2000, Florida Secretary of State Katherine Harris certified George W. Bush the winner over Al Gore in the state's presidential balloting by a 537-vote margin. On this date in 1789, Americans observed a day of Thanksgiving set aside by President George Washington to mark the adoption of the Constitution of the United States. In 1883, former slave and abolitionist Sojourner Truth died in Battle Creek, Michigan. In 1950, China entered the Korean War, launching a counteroffensive against soldiers from the United Nations, the U.S., and South Korea. In 1973, President Richard Nixon's personal secretary, Rosemary Woods, told a federal court that she'd accidentally caused part of the 18-and-a-half-minute gap in a key Watergate tape. 10 years ago, an investigation ordered by Ireland's government found that Roman Catholic Church leaders in Dublin had spent decades sheltering child-abusing priests from the law and that most fellow clerics had turned a blind eye. 5 years ago, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had a heart stent implanted, reviving talk about how long the 81-year-old liberal jurist would be staying on the court. 1 year ago, a NASA spacecraft designed to drill down into Mars' interior landed on the planet. It was the first successful landing on Mars in 6 years. And the thought for today is by Oprah Winfrey. Be thankful for what you have. You'll end up having more. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never, ever have enough. And again, that was by Oprah Winfrey. Oh.
Here's a community calendar. Daybreak Rotary Club is 6:45 a.m. Iowa Central Community College Cafeteria, room 101. Railroad Retirees is 8 a.m. at Brownie's Cafe, 1712 Central Avenue. Senior Coffee, 9 a.m. at Emerald Oaks Dining Hall in Emmitsburg. Kossuth County Historical Museum is 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Kossuth County Historical Museum in Algona. Blandon Memorial Art Museum, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., 920 3rd Avenue South. Admission is free. Stonecroft Women's Connection, 11:30 a.m. Noon Kiwanis is noon at the Pizza Ranch. KYL Noon Book Club is at noon. Kendall Young Library, Webster City. The book is Alice Network. AA Alano Club, noon to 7 p.m., noon and 7 p.m. Serenity Group, 12 North 7th Street. Humboldt Rotary Club is noon at Miller's Landing, Highway 169 South in Humboldt. KYL Teen Lounge, 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. Kendall Young Library in Webster City. KYL Lego Fun Club is 4 to 5 p.m. Kendall Young Library in Webster City. Al-Anon, 5:30 p.m. at 600 North Wrigley Street in Algona. Life Without Ed, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. First Presbyterian Church, Room 108. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club is 6 p.m. Instructional session and play of hands at the Citizen Central. Disabled American Veterans Chapter 29 is 6:30 p.m. at the VFW Club, 5th Avenue South and 29th Street. Bets Off, Gamblers Anonymous, 8 to 9 p.m. Community and Family Resources, 726 South 17th Street, 576-7261. Ah, Masters Toastmasters Club is 6:30 p.m. East Campus, Iowa Central Community College, 2031 Quail Avenue, former Smithway Motor Express, Western Express offices. You enter at the front door. Interested persons are welcome. For information, call 570-7660. Harmony Brigade Barbershop Chorus, 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. First Presbyterian Church Music Room, 1111 First Avenue North. Open to all men who love to sing. Contact 570-3414. N.A. Candlelight Stick Meeting is 7 to 8 p.m. Shalom Center at 501 North 12th Street. There's one announcement in here. It's by Zay Kears. Come join us for lunch. Tuesday is barbecued ham balls. Wednesday is Sloppy Joe's. They are closed on Thursday. Friday is butterfly shrimp. And that's at Zay Kears, 425 2nd Avenue South.
You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 o'clock p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program, you can give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we turn to today's obituaries. First, Mick Jolson. Mick Jolson, 72, of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, November 24, 2019, at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, December 1, 2019, at First Presbyterian Church. Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services is entrusted with the arrangements. Michael Mick David Jolson, the son of Harold and Marvel Trudeau Jolson, was born December 12, 1946 in Mason City, Iowa. He graduated from Mason City High School and earned his teaching and coaching degree from Wartburg College. His goal in life was to simply make a difference. He empowered and affirmed numerous students and athletes throughout his many years of teaching and coaching. He taught junior high, middle school, social studies, language arts, and coached at various schools, including 2 years at Semcoe, Gilman, 8 years in Davenport, 6 years in Ankeny, and over 23 years in Fort Dodge. He coached eighth grade football, girls varsity golf, junior high boys basketball, and assistant girls varsity basketball. Mick was married to Annette Dillon on June 17, 1977. Mick retired in 2007, and the couple retired to Florida for 4 years before returning to Iowa. He enjoyed golfing and making people he encountered feel good. Survivors include his wife, Annette, his children, Shelley Jolson of Kansas City, Missouri, Matthew and Isabella Jolson of Clarksville, Tennessee, and Amanda and Kevin Jolson of Ankeny. Grandchildren, Felicia and Bryant Dusing, and Avery Sophia Jolson, great-granddaughter McKenna, mother and father-in-law Roy and Carol Dillon of Fort Dodge, brothers brother-in-laws, Wade and Charlene and Tom Dillon, and sister-in-law, Betty Jolson. Mick was preceded in death by his parents and his brother, Gary, and sister-in-law, Rhonda Dillon. Mick was a beloved teacher and coach by all that knew him. His impact reached thousands of students across the state of Iowa. His ability to make an impact came naturally. Mick enjoyed playing golf with his wife and best friend. Anyone who is able to spend part of their life with Mick is better for it. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to be used at the direction of the family.
Next is Melvin E. Madsen, Lorenz. Melvin E. Madsen, 92, of Lorenz, passed away Sunday, November 24, 2019, at the Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines, Iowa. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, November 27, 2019, at the Powers Funeral Home, Sacred Heart Chapel in Lorenz, with Father Dennis Cephalic officiating. Burial will follow at the Calvary Cemetery near Lorenz, Iowa. Visitation is from 3 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, November 26, 2019, at the Powers Funeral Home, Sacred Heart Chapel in Lorenz. Military rites will be provided by Lorenz American Legion and VFW. The Powers Funeral Home in Lorenz, Iowa is handling arrangements for online condolences and obituaries. Visit powersfh.net.
Next, Beverly J. Musselman. Beverly J. Musselman, 83, of Fort Dodge, passed away Sunday, November 24, 2019, at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 30, 2019, at Laufersweiler Severs Funeral Home. Entombment will follow at the North Lawn Mausoleum. A visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Molly Hunziker, Sac City. Memorial services will be 11 a.m. Friday at St. Peter Lutheran Church in rural Sac City. Interment will follow in the church cemetery. Visitation is held from 10 a.m. until the service time at the church. Next, James Stock, Lakeview. Funeral services will be 10:15 a.m. Saturday at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Lakeview. Visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the church. Announcements from Laufersweiler and Severs Funeral Home. Marvin M. Fiella, age 87, visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. today at Laufersweiler Funeral Home. Beverly J. Musselman, age 83, funeral is 10:30 a.m. Saturday at Laufersweiler Funeral Home. Visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday. And Sue Kelly, age 68, celebration of life at a later date.
And to the Messenger editorial page, there's a new learning center. Will be a fine tribute to Iowa Chief Justice Mark Cady. Education site will continue legacy of jurist from Fort Dodge. In the future, visitors to the Iowa Judicial Branch building in Des Moines will be able to learn about civics and civil rights in a special area named after the late Iowa Supreme Court Justice Mark Cady, a Fort Dodge resident who died November 15th. Days after Cady's death, state judicial officials announced plans to create the center and name it after him. It will be called the Chief Justice Mark S. Cady Learning Center. The center will have interactive exhibits to show the progress of a case through Iowa court system. It will also highlight the state's civil rights history, and it will show the importance of fair and impartial courts. Graphic design, industrial design, and interior design students at Iowa State University in Ames have been charged with developing a blueprint for the center. We believe this is a fitting tribute to Katie, who never lost his desire to talk to people about the importance of the courts and the law. Katie was a Chief Justice who took the Iowa Supreme Court on the road, holding oral arguments in different communities so that people could see firsthand how the court works. He also served on the Civics Board of Directors. One of his goals was to create a learning center at the Judicial Branch Building. That goal will now be fulfilled. When the center opens, Katie's legacy to the state will extend beyond the thousands of rulings and opinions he wrote. His desire to talk to people about courts and the law will live on in a new center that will bear his name. It will certainly be a fitting tribute.
Next, lottery group settles with winner who sought bigger prize. This is written by Ryan J. Foley, Webster City man's attorney. He's relieved that it's over. A national lottery group, rocked by an insider's jackpot rigging conspiracy, said Monday it has settled a lawsuit brought by an Iowa grandfather who alleged that a $9 million prize he won in 2011 should have been nearly three times as big. The Multi-State Lottery Association and Larry Dawson informed a judge of the settlement this month, canceling a trial that was scheduled to begin next week in Des Moines. The terms of the deal are confidential. He's relieved that it's over, Dawson's attorney Nicholas Morrow said. Dawson, a financial advisor who lives in Webster City on a $9 million hot lottery jackpot, a jackpot in 2011. He happily claimed the $6 million pre-tax cash payout, surrounded by his wife, children, and grandchildren. But years later, he learned that the game's previous $16.5 million jackpot had been rigged by Eddie Tipton, the Lottery Association's Information Security Director, in a massive fraud. Dawson, 66, sued in 2016, alleging that the $16.5 million should have carried over to the prize he won under Hot Lotto's rules. His lawsuit sought $10 million, the size of the lump sum cash option plus interest. The settlement is the second in recent months to resolve legal claims alleging that the association's lack of security allowed Tipton's fraud to occur and cheated players. The association agreed to pay $4.3 million to settle a class action lawsuit, giving refunds to players who purchased tickets for tainted drawings between 2005 and 2013. A statement issued by the association said the group and its insurance carrier decided to settle the case to avoid additional litigation expenses. The group said the agreement contains a confidentiality clause that prevents either party from discussing the terms or releasing it. Settlement agreements involving government bodies are public records under Iowa law, but it's not clear how that law would apply to the association, a nonprofit that is owned by 38 state and territorial lotteries. In resolving his case, Dawson dismissed claims against the Iowa Lottery. That agency and the Iowa Attorney General's office said they don't have copies of the settlement. Iowa Lottery CEO Matt Strawn said no state or Iowa lottery money will fund the settlement. The settlement between the Multi-State Lottery Association and Mr. Dawson closes a chapter in lottery history that tested the integrity of lottery games, he said. Iowa officials passed this test by investigating, uncovering, and prosecuting Tipton's fraud, Strawn said.
And here's an article about the newest police officer in Fort Dodge. The newest police officer in Fort Dodge has a lot of energy, and he apparently likes to carry a ball in his mouth. Draco, a frisky German Shepherd dog, was introduced to the city council Monday evening. He joined the police force a couple months ago and is still being trained, police officer chief Roger Porter said. The dog is on the job with his handler, Patrol Officer Jacob Natz. When not on duty, Draco lives with Nats. Nestle Purina Pet Care, which has a plan at 2400 Fifth Avenue South, awarded a $12,000 grant to help pay for the acquiring of the dog and buy in needing equipment to support a police canine. Porter said about $18,000 was raised to help pay for the dog and equipment. Nestle Purina Pet Care's grant paid most of the cost, with smaller donations from citizens making up the rest of the total, he said. Draco replaces Abram, a German Shepherd dog who was retired about a year ago. Abram was sent to a facility in Pennsylvania that specializes in retraining police and military dogs to become household pests.
Next, getting ready for broadband. Fort Dodge Council moves ahead with next steps, by Bill Shea. Now that Fort Dodge voters have given their blessing to the possibility of a municipal broadband utility that could provide internet service to compete with private companies, city officials are moving ahead with figuring out more details of such a venture. With no debate, the City Council on Monday hired Smart Source Consulting, Grimes, to help with the next stages of the process. The company will be paid $12,000 for the work. Smart Source Consulting has been working on broadband issues for the city since June. Its initial contract was for $22,500. On November 5th, Fort Dodge voters approved the concept of a municipal utility, with 71.6% of them voting yes. A simple majority of yes votes was needed to give the council the power to move forward with a municipal broadband utility. Under its new contract, the company will develop a high-level business model for a broadband utility. It will also draft a formal request for entities, including the city's current internet providers, who may want to partner with the local government on broadband. Smart Source Consulting will also write a request for proposals soliciting firms interested in doing a detailed feasibility study of a municipal utility. Ryan Mayle, the Assistant Director of Parks, Recreation, and Forestry, who is playing a key role in the city's broadband initiative, submitted a timeline to the council. According to his timeline, Smart Source Consulting will submit its business model report in January. Mayle wrote that in March, city officials will review the results of the request for information from entities that could partner with the city. He added that in April, city officials will interview representatives of firms interested in conducting the feasibility study.
Now to the sports page. Article by Eric Pratt. Kershaw is a rare two-time first-teamer. The Dodger just the second in the program history to earn repeat spot on top all-state list. The Fort Dodge football program's record books date back to over 100 years. Senior wide receiver Tyson Kershaw made a little history of his own on Monday. Kershaw became just the second Dodger ever to be named a two-time first-team Iowa Print Sports Writers Association All-State selection in football, joining rushing champion Sam Cook among the very best to wear the red and black. Classmates Ashley Torson and Austin Lee garnered second-team honors for the Fort Dodge Senior High, which went 6-3 during the regular season to secure consecutive playoff berths in head coach Matt Miller's final year at the helm. This continues on 3. The 6'4" Kershaw finished among the top 10 receivers in Class 4A with 49 catches and 606 yards and 8 touchdowns. He became the first Dodger ever to eclipse a 2,000-yard mark for his career and ended up ranked among 10 best receivers ever statistically in Iowa's largest class for receptions, yards, and touchdowns. Kershaw said he was aware of just how rare the repeat first-team recognition would be, not only at Fort Dodge, but in general. "I knew coming into the season Sam was the only person to do it in school history," Kershaw said. "So that really gave me something to chase individually. This means a lot, and I'm honored knowing all my hard work the past four seasons helped lead to this. It was a personal goal of mine." Thorson was a first-team all-district safety as a junior last year. He accepted that responsibility again this year while also inheriting the full-time quarterback duties from 2018 Class 4A Player of the Year Drake Miller. The 6'2 Thorson wasted...
Was the.
Looks like... One word put together.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the 6'2 Thorson was the long snapper on Pats and Dodgers punters as well. He was named the second team's utility at-large selection. Thorson's grandfather, the late Sherwin Thorson, played football and wrestled at the University of Iowa. His father, Tajaron, was a first-team All-State linebacker in 1988. Thorson's other grandpa, Sam Mosier, was a star high school and junior college football player before his Hall of Fame coaching career at Fort Dodge Senior High. And one of his uncles, Nick Mosier, was a first-team All-State defensive back for the Dodgers, who went on to start at Iowa State University. Lee, a three-year letter winner, led Fort Dodge Senior High in tackles for loss and sacks this fall. The 195-pounder was the co-captain of Dodger defense that produced the second most turnovers ever in a single season of 32. "I said it before, Austin is the epitome of Dodger football," Miller said. "He never makes excuses and never gets outworked. He's a true throwback." "There were so many great linebackers in 4A this year, so this is a tremendous achievement, and no one is more deserving. He put everything he had into our program. We'll really miss Tyson, Asley, Austin, and this entire senior class."
Next, top billing, Algona's Wegner named 2A captain by Dana Becker. "When the Algona football team needed a big play, they looked to senior Wyatt Wegner. And Wegner delivered time and time again. The Iowa Print Sports Writers Association honored Wegner as the Class 2A captain of the All-State team. Wegner was one of eight selections from the area spread among five different classes, with his Algona teammate Andrew Hamilton joining him on the first team. Cole Lewis was on the second with Bulldogs Gavin Mainz and Garrett Schmidt on the third as Algona celebrated a trip to the state semifinals this year. In 3A, Webster City's Tyler Olson made the first team with teammate Trey Mathis on the second and Will Tassler the third. Aaron Graves from Southeast Webster was a 2A third team pick. South Central Calhoun's Brian King, Landon Schleisman, and Chase Scheindegger made the 1A first team with Brennan Holder and Zane Newbaum on the second. Also in 1A, Nick Gertis of East Sac County and Ben Dunlap from Emmitsburg were third team choices. Brendan Anderson of North Union led the way in with a first team nod, while Manson Northwest Webster's Caden Berkey was on the second team. St. Edmund's senior Nick Lawler earned a spot on the third team, as did Bishop Garrigan's Alex Mammon and Marcus Plath. Bryce Kopic, a former Newell Fonda standout who played at West Sioux this fall, was named to the 1A second team. Wegner, a repeat All-Stater from a year ago, averaged 14.5 yards per play this season. He finished with 30 combined rushing and receiving touchdowns and 2,130 yards from scrimmage. And along with his standout play on offense, Wagner was also the second leading tackler on the team, had a team-high 3 interceptions, and returned 2 punts for scores. Hamilton, a senior, helped pave the way for Wagner up front as the Bulldogs finished with almost 5,000 yards of offense and scored 69 touchdowns. He also had 12 solo tackles for loss and 6 sacks. Lewis was also a repeat All-State selection for Algona after making the first team last year. Olson, a junior for the Lynx, led the state with 12 interceptions. He was also Webster City's leading receiver and made 33 tackles from his secondary position. King, who also made the All-State first team a year ago, was one of the top linemen for a South Central Calhoun squad that averaged 39 points per game. He recorded 6 solo tackles for loss, 13 assisted tackles for loss, and 6 combined sacks on defense. Schleissman, a senior, was second on the SCC team with 52.5 tackles, adding 7 sacks, a second-team All-Stater as a junior. Schleissman led the way with 743 yards on the ground and 14 touchdowns on offense. Scheidegger had 4 interceptions, 37.5 tackles, and 3 stops for loss as the repeat first-team selection helped the Titans record 3 shutouts. Anderson was a leader for North Union as he caught 55 passes for 864 yards and 11 touchdowns. The senior also led the team with 60.5 tackles and returned a kickoff for a score. Graves, just a sophomore but with 2 All-State nods to his resume already, had 55 tackles and 10 sacks for the Jaguars. He has verbally committed to the University of Iowa. The A2 District Player of the Year, Lawler, had 51 tackles with 2 sacks for the Gales, while also anchoring the offensive lines as a senior. Berkey, a senior, recorded 7 interceptions, which ranked 2nd in A. He also led the Cougars with 317 yards receiving and 3 scores. Joining Wagner as captains were Don Bosco's Thomas Even, 8-man, West Hancock's Tate Hagen, A, West Sioux's Hunter Deckers, 1A, Western Dubuque's Kelvin Harris, 3A, and West Des Moines Dowling's Michael Keough, 4A.
An article by Dana Becker. Triton women are crowned again. Fresh off winning the NJCAA cross-country title, the Iowa Central women flex their even longer distance muscles here Saturday by capturing the NJCAA half marathon championship.
Okay, and now for the extended weather.
Oh, geez, we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm. Today, rain, then snow, high around 38, low around 28, with wind out of the east-northeast, 8 to 13. Wednesday, snow is likely, high around 32, low around 17. Thursday, chance of snow. Friday, rain and snow. Saturday, chance of rain. Sunday, chance of snow. And Monday, mostly sunny. Well, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. Wishing you all a dream to bless and a star to guide.